Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
The reason that your life is fraught with the things that it's fraught with is because you're refusing to grow up. I mean, imagine a man, 35, 40 years old, and he still thinks that someone's supposed to make his bed for him. And that he's supposed to just play all the time. His life would be in a constant state of conflict with the world around him, even if he could afford to do that. Because it isn't the world around a person that determines their experience of reality, of life. It is the worlds within the individual. And it is their natural movement and fruition that one is intended to attend to, so that in that relationship as it develops, were it under natural conditions and the individual himself willing to place himself under natural order, there would be no conflict at all between going through this life, garnering all of the experiences that it has to offer, and then gradually giving up the self that seeks experience to define itself by them. And this movement, this natural movement from seed to twig to tree to leaf to flower to fruit, and then back to a more perfected seed, that movement is intended to be the sum of an individual's life. And it's not even taking place in some ways in your life, because of parts of you that have refused to grow up. You still want what you think you have to have in spite of giving it to yourself with all of its unhappiness repeatedly. You know, when you're a kid, you give yourself something and it's pretty good the first time you give yourself to it. Remember that? You give yourself something and it's pretty cool. You grow up, you can buy something a little better, you give that to yourself, that's pretty cool. But after you do it about 15 times, it loses its coolness. And it starts to mock you. Doesn't it? Can you see that? Can any of you see that? Now, when I say we're supposed to move from world to world, you can see in the everyday understanding of a human being that individual, as he matures physically, he moves from world to world to world. She goes from being a little girl to a teenager, from a teenager to a young woman, from a young woman to perhaps a mother, perhaps, but certainly a woman. And from a woman, she grows into what should be natural grace of aging. And from that natural aging, there should be a fruition of that natural age into the wisdom that should be the accumulated fruition of all of that work. But that doesn't even happen. That doesn't even happen on this planet. You see these ridiculous poor people, and maybe you're one of them, and if you are, wake up, trying to preserve their youth. Why would you want to preserve what didn't make you happy the first time? But that world of physicality is only the first step. You're meant to move from the world of being a physical creature, a creature whose life is determined by the relationship that he or she has with exterior circumstance, into a life where interior events begin to become the focus of a person's life. Now your life is focused by an unconscious relationship with interior thought and feeling as a reaction to exterior life. That's not a direct relationship. That's a second stage relationship. That's a world apart. But even that world of moving into the interior of one's life, that's just a world in itself. And then there's the world that is made up of what creates those thoughts and feelings. And a person has the potential to continue a journey of his or her own awareness into levels of consciousness. My Father's kingdom has many mansions. What on earth do you think that refers to? It doesn't refer to a point where you start to think about a different place to live. It refers to actually inhabiting while you're in this body. I'll say it more accurately, having other mansions, other kingdoms actually inhabit you because you bring yourself to relationship with them out of releasing and having expired the former kingdoms. And these are not, I know there are words that I'm speaking to you, but I'm talking to you about what your life should be on this planet and why there isn't the happiness that could be in it. How can a person be happy trying to find a way to make the cell that their own unconscious mind has created for themselves into something different by painting it different colors all the time? By changing the direction you face your chair in the cell? There's no happiness in that. And there can be no peace, certainly no contentment. Because peace and contentment doesn't come out of compromising ourselves through trying to acquire the things it does, but it comes out of belonging to a world in which we're a natural movement in it. A river isn't contained. Light has no vessel that holds it. These things are natural forces and supernatural forces moving according to the direction they're given by a will greater than themselves. And to participate in that kind of life is to participate in what naturally fulfills the individual, because that's what you're feeling you're missing. That's what's missing from your life. Constrain, constrain, constrain. Which brings me to the next point. There are very, very critical points in a person's spiritual development. Actual stages, and I use the word loosely, but they're actual stages, points of initiation, where one must move from a childish understanding of something born out of a childish wish to the mature understanding of something. And what it costs, what the responsibility that comes with that new maturity. And most people, they walk away, if they're ever lucky enough to find what is true, they walk away from it at these points where it's suddenly clear to them that something else has to take place here. In this instance, let me tell you what I'm talking about. There is a very, very common misconception, and it's global and it's in you, that spiritual work... The reason that one does spiritual work is so that you can be freed from being negative. That's why one works. You think, I'm doing the spiritual work so I'm not troubled and bothered by these negative states. That is not the reason for spiritual work. Spiritual work is not to free you from negative states, from negative times. Real spiritual work is to free you from the illusion of time altogether. Real spiritual work is to free you from the illusion of time altogether. And what does that mean? It means it's to free you from this divided mind that creates time and all of the negative states that come with that. You can't free yourself from negative states. The self that appears to free you from a negative moment is an extension of the negativity. But you do have something inside of you that's capable of recognizing the nature that generates this. And that's the point at which most people turn away if they ever get that close. Because a person thinks, all I want to do is just, you know, I just want to smooth out the rough parts of my life. The rough parts of your life are pleasures that have rotted in time. Examine it if you would. What do you call a rough spot? The person you love, you don't love anymore. The house you built for yourself isn't right. What you thought would make you complete doesn't make you complete. And you gave all that time and effort to whatever it was that you gave, and suddenly it's there, it's mocking you, it's not enough. And that's the rough time. But that rough time was the road to reality for you when you set out on it. And then the same mind that produces that constant cycle of self just comes up with the next stage that you're to go through. And all stages of development are illusions of time. They don't work the way your mind wants them to work because you want to free yourself from parts of yourself. Only God is good. You do not free yourself from parts of yourself. That's darkness trying to manifest what it calls light in order to escape the darkness that it calls darkness. And there's passages, if you're not familiar with them. How great is that darkness that calls itself the light? How great is the deception of the individual who sits down to escape himself by coming up with another plan created by the same nature that built the cell he's trying to get out of? And it's when we start to understand that this extraordinary process is going on inside of us, where we find ourselves the victim, and it's not an inappropriate word. We find ourselves the victim of our own unenlightened nature. We find ourselves a victim of what we're going to call darkness.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Now we're going to study darkness and light this morning. And I know that for some of you, you can't wait to get your minds wrapped around concept, and others wish that you didn't ever have to hear a concept. And I don't know how to explain to you that what your mind presently deals with, whatever that may be, that which your mind struggles with isn't real. I don't know how to tell you that. There's no words to convey it. That everything such as the word darkness, that produces a reaction inside of you? That the reaction to a word darkness, the reaction to a concept about it, that reaction is itself a form of darkness. And then you take that reaction as being the truth of yourself, and instead of understanding that you are meant to live with and in and through and by something that need never resist anything, then you can begin to realize that when you hear things like what we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about right now, what is darkness? What is darkness within? Now come awake, and you really need to stay refreshed if you can. What is the darkness within? First, what is darkness? When we talk about darkness inside of ourselves, the first thing that people think is that darkness has something to do with something bad. Darkness, the first part of it, has nothing to do with anything bad at all. Darkness within is simply, it's that which is unknown. That which is unknown in you is darkness. And that which is unknown in you is the same as saying that which there is no consciousness of or in. That's what is darkness. It's unknown. All right. How many of you ever found walking along, something happens, and all of a sudden up comes something inside of you, and you realize, I don't know why I'm afraid of that. We're not talking about negative right now. Fear. What's that? That's a little bit of darkness, isn't it? I didn't know it was there, meaning I couldn't see it. And clearly I wasn't conscious of it prior to that moment that it was stirred up inside of me. But now suddenly I have some consciousness of it. It's also quite clear that it isn't conscious of itself, or somehow I would have been aware of that fear. So darkness within is simply a form, if you will, a kind of energy that has quality and character at certain levels, which we are not conscious of, but here's the point, that we can be. That we can be conscious of the darkness within ourselves. And the darkness within ourselves, and this is a fairly important point, and it's not that critical that you understand it, but for those of you that can, I put it in. The darkness within ourselves is the earth of ourselves. It is the unexplored essence. It is the quality and characteristics of matter that have to themselves distinctions, but which inside of us have no distinction because they're unrealized. They have no character to us as yet because they are in darkness. We don't know they're there, and they're not conscious of themselves. Darkness within. All human beings are loaded with darkness within. That's what we are. We're walking around with all of this. Now we'll change the word. Because darkness that is not realized but that can be is a potential darkness, isn't it? So we're loaded with a kind of potentiality that we have no consciousness of and that itself has no consciousness of either. But our life presently is comprised of moments in which life brings up and stirs inside of us certain of these earth elements, essential parts. And when they stir them up inside of us, it brings up the second kind of darkness. The first darkness is that which is unknown. The second darkness does not belong to natural creation, but is a creation of the creation in which that darkness dwells. The second darkness is a creation of that creation in which the first darkness dwells. Now I'll say it to you simpler. The second darkness is that which resists the unknown. That's the second darkness, but it's not a natural part of darkness. Meaning that inside of us, here comes this fear. We talked about it. We weren't negative. And then all of a sudden, up comes all of this stuff. And it says, oh my God, I can't. That'll never work. I'm not going to go through that. This will hurt if I do that. That's resistance to the darkness, isn't it? Do you understand? So here's one darkness that has to do with what is unknown. And then there is another kind of darkness that resists the unknown. And in that resistance does what? When you resist a fear, are you a happy camper? When you start trying to get things done, you're impatient. You try to push away the situation you're blaming on it. What kind of person are you? Are you a positive person or a negative person? So negativity is born out of the darkness resisting the darkness. Yes or no?
Yes.
So here is inside of an individual a natural state of what is unknown and that can be realized, that is potential, and then within that same structure exists another kind of darkness that is unknown and creates what is all the time unwanted. Unwanted. What could unwant that which is given by man, by woman, by God? What could unwant that? Certainly it's not creation that unwants that, but it's a creation of the creation. It's a creation of our own minds, of our own experience, of a certain nature that's produced in us as we grow up, where our mind, being divided, doesn't understand the nature of darkness. Human beings look at a moment in which something comes along to take from them that which they've acquired or accumulated or cultivated, and they believe that that which wants to take away from them their security must be evil. But the first thing that person understands is that that which they've called security has to have been in part of the darkness, doesn't it? Unknown. They called it known, but it wasn't known. And then comes a moment, tries to take that away, and a person sits and hates life instead of recognizing, here's a natural moment in which something that I thought was mine, something that was known, is clearly evidenced not to be known. Because who clutches that which puts them in conflict? Do you understand the question? Does a human being think to himself, you know, today I'm going to get up and I'm going to cling to as many things as I can so that I can be in pain? No, that's an act of darkness, isn't it? But when life comes along and shows to you that that's an act of darkness, that you're identified and attached to and clinging to these images that you think you know what they are, but they're actually not, because they're producing a self. And all of a sudden you're trying to, oh, no, no, no. Is that an act of darkness or an act of light? All of that clutching and clinging. Darkness. Well, is it painful? So here is a very important understanding. There's darkness. God, if there weren't darkness, nothing would grow. It's necessary. Nothing could, what would be transformed? If that's darkness, what is light? We're talking about what darkness within is. Talked about a kind of, in quotes, natural darkness. That which is unknown, waiting to be realized. That's what's potential. And then there's that which resists the unknown, which is a creation of imagination, which is a creation of the creation. Imagination is a creation of the creation. Do you understand that? So what's the light within? The light within is that which reveals and realizes the darkness. The light within is that which reveals and realizes the darkness. Now, what does that mean? Ever been troubled by something? Ever try to get yourself out of trouble? Ever get into more trouble? Then one day you realize, I can't get myself out of trouble. And you have to stop. And then when you get stopped, because because you can't take yourself any farther. What happens to that which you said was one thing, but now you recognize wasn't that thing, but something else altogether? Isn't that the same as realizing that what you thought was the problem wasn't the problem? Isn't that? And if I suddenly see that what I thought was the problem isn't the problem, that's the same as saying that first darkness took itself to be the light and said, this is the problem, but couldn't see it. And now something has realized clearly what the problem is. And when the problem, and this is key here, when the problem is revealed and realized, where's the problem? Doesn't exist anymore, does it? And that which was problematical, that which was dark, becomes part of the body of light. Doesn't it? So we can see a divergence. We can see two paths where darkness generates darkness and darkness becomes a greater part of the body of darkness. Or the path in which light is brought into darkness and darkness becomes part of the light through its light's action on the darkness. One is incorporating, one is an act of love, isn't it? When you talk about an act of love, what greater act of love is there? In fact, this is another element in itself. Do you know that the greatest gift of all goes unseen by human beings almost in its entirety?
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit GuyFinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
And the greatest gift of all happens to be light. Now go slow. And I wasn't going to get into this, but I'm going to a little bit. There is uncreated light, and there is created light. There is uncreated darkness, and there is created darkness. The uncreated light is that aspect of God's life, of the divine, that in the West we call Christ. The uncreated light. God said, let there be light. He didn't make it. He took it from himself. It is of himself. And please, if religious ideas trouble you, try to understand, I'm not talking religiously. I'm talking about what you and I are intended to become conscious of in ourselves, so that we're not simply parrots spouting off all this ridiculous sentimental garbage that has to do with religious beliefs so that we can get a sense of ourselves from them. Did you know that every true religious idea that a human being ever finds living inside of himself humiliates the individual who finds it? And in that humiliation, that individual finds a new kind of glorification because he is made less for all that he has found, but becomes more in that which he has found. All at once, that uncreated light and uncreated darkness is the first heaven. And then if you know anything in virtually in every scripture, but in Genesis, it talks about a firmament that was created that divided the waters from the waters. And no one understands this. And the firmament that divided the waters from the waters is not the heavens. It's the first heavens, and the first heavens themselves are not created. And you read, if you understand, then it says God created the heaven beneath that. There was an earth and a heaven that was uncreated, and an earth and a heaven that was created. And that second, the heavens that were beneath the first firmament, is what we look up and see. And it's out of that that comes all of the forms that we recognize. And the point, in case you've missed it, because I don't want it to be an essential part of our talk, is that there is that which is uncreated, and from the uncreated comes the created, and from the created comes subcreation. And there's the scale. And there's levels in it. And light itself is a form of that that comes down and down and down. And it starts with that which God made in and of himself. And that light, when we talk about it, that light that we see, now go, I see, you gotta get this. I hope you can understand this. When you look out and you see what you see, because light has sacrificed itself. Of course it has. Any, the smallest thing, if you say, well, how do you see what you see? It's because it has given itself to that. It has absorbed 95%, and a little bit is reflected by the matter that it touches. And were it not for light giving itself to that, you would never see a thing. Not only does light do that, but it brings the beauty out. Light gives beauty to darkness. Darkness has no beauty in itself. There would be no beauty were it not for the light sacrificing itself. And not only does the light sacrifice itself by giving it to reveal it, but at the same time that it enters into it, it transforms what it touches and gives it the life that only light can, because darkness by itself doesn't have light that can change in itself. Here is all this going on. And I'm not talking to you about theory. I'm talking about what you are supposed to be living in, and what lives in you that wants you to see it. What lives in you that wants you to see it out there, not what you want to see out there, so you can have a life you give yourself by describing life. Did I lose you? Because you look like you're in the waiting office of the dental place again. It's so important to understand relationship. I can't tell you, but you just like to think about yourself. Your little world. All the people in it. Everything that's got to be done. And most important, the day they do it for me. And then I keep everything going. What on earth are you talking about, man? You're talking about keeping yourself going. You're talking about keeping the time self, the divided mind, that darkened state of yourself. That's what you want to keep going. It wants to keep itself going. So back to this. This light within is that which reveals and realizes the darkness at all stages. Do you understand? You can have a negative reaction to something. In other words, here comes, something stirs the darkness, and the darkness, when it gets stirred, here's the self that knows this is no good, and all of a sudden that's going on. There's double darkness. How many of you like double dips? Here's a double dip of darkness. All the better for light. The light is everything. It's the light that changes things. It's the light that adds beauty. It's the light that is compassion. Darkness can't be kind. This great dark undiscovered earth in us, It needs the dawning of the sun. You can take that any way you want to take those words, S-U-N or S-O-N, meaning that it needs the dawning of light. It needs that which transforms it, and without which it is barren. I'm telling you, see, you don't think so. You know why you don't think your lives are barren? Because you have so much that you don't want in them. You have so many plans. I'm speaking to you as honestly as I know how. That is a barren life because it is devoid of light. Only a nature that thinks a plan can rescue it, that then comes to the end of that plan and hatches another one, believes that there's actually some kind of life in a plan. What man taking thought can add one cubit to his stature? You can find any wish and way you want to realize what I'm speaking, but here it is. So what does one do? We're talking about awakening the light within, realizing it. How does one do it? That's the question of the ages. And it is not by conceptualizing it. It's not by saying, I believe in Christ. It has nothing to do with anything thought can generate, because thought is a form of darkness. So I'm going to tell you a story to explain what it is that has to happen. How do we, in essence, awaken this light within? What is that process by which? What does it mean? And that's the best you can do, because it's not a how-to, it's a discovery of. So here's a story. Take a breath. Once a school, spiritual school, a true school, and all true schools are connected to all true schools, by the way. And a true school with a few true students in it who understood that the school they were in, the true school, was a means. But people who find a true school that is a means understands that's all there is means. That the whole idea of an end is born out of a self that wants to figure out how to escape its pain. And when a person understands that darkness only wants to escape itself and can't, and that only light can do for darkness, in darkness, what makes darkness no longer darkness, then that person stops seeking the ends the way that all of you do. But in order to move from the school that they were in, meaning the world they were in, to the next school, meaning the next world within themselves, they had to transverse, they had to go across a valley, a great valley, and it was an east-west valley. I don't know if you know this. Do you know there's only a very few east-west valleys in the whole world? Most valleys run north to south. I don't know why that is. Probably has something to do with the formation of matter relative to light and geomagnetics. I don't know why. An east-west valley. And an east-west valley means that essentially the sun, it has, 12 full hours? It has the full measure of light. And they have to cross this valley that has the full measure of light. This is a spiritual story, so, you know, shake off your silliness, will you? Well, the problem with crossing this valley of light was that in this valley there were shadow creatures, all shapes and sizes, and they were malicious. Malicious in that their sole purpose was to see that the student that was trying to cross the valley would get to whatever distance the student would get to, and the malicious spirit would pick it up, whirl it around, bang it a few times, and then drop it back at the beginning of the valley again. So that those who tried to cross the valley only got 10 feet, 100 feet, 100 yards, a mile, and at some point one of these malicious shadow spirits would pick up this poor person, this student, whack him on the head a few times, bang him around, then drop him back at the front of the valley. Now, how many of you have been dropped off in the front of the valley a few times? Don't you ever leave. Don't you ever leave. Don't you ever leave the front of the valley. If you walk through it and walk through it and walk through it and walk through it and get thrown back and get thrown back and get thrown back, and you let the light that set you there show you why it is that you're getting thrown back, one day you won't get thrown back and you'll make it to the next world in yourself.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
Well, one of the students was such a student. In fact, we'll make it a couple. Male and a female. And they made it through the valley. And when anyone makes it through the valley, part of their responsibility is to come back to the beginning of the valley and help those who haven't made it through there yet. That's the whole story across the board. It's the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega. You're here, you're not, I'm sorry, I have some bad news for you. You're not here for yourself. That's why you suffer. Because you're here for yourself. And when the students were brought back, the teacher, knowing that they had made it through the valley, asked them, well, how did you get it? How did you finally get across? And the woman with the man said, well, we were out there for 7 straight years just trying to get across that one valley. And some of the students who had been there for 21 years said, she's only 7 years? And the teacher said, well, why don't you tell us? And they knew that the teacher knew that even though they would tell the secret of making it through that valley, that it wouldn't impact necessarily anybody, but it would give those a better chance to understand what has to happen. See, you can tell people the truth, but you can't give them the ability to act it out. That has to come from their love of truth. Only the love of truth can help a person have the will of truth in them. They said, well, as all of you well know, you start to go across and you get to a certain distance and all of a sudden the shadow's there. Now, do I need to translate that for you? You're doing certain stuff and all of a sudden there's that idiot. There's that problem. There's that condition. Here comes the depression. Here comes the worry. Oh, anxious. Gotta do. Gotta go. These are shadows, aren't they? And when a shadow comes along, what does a shadow do to you? What's the first thing you do to a shadow, by the way? Put them up. You're not going to get me, you evil shadow. And that's even if you recognize it. Usually you don't recognize it. Just pick you up and throw you back to the beginning. Sometimes you fight with the shadow. They said, we did all that. And then one day, she said, I began to wonder, this is intuition speaking now, I began to wonder, how come I never see the shadows until they get me? I mean, wouldn't that be a good question for a person who wanted to get across the valley to ask themselves? How come I'm walking along, I think I'm near it, shadow, negative state, anxious thought, fearful feeling. How come they just appear out of nowhere? She said, and I knew logically they couldn't appear out of nowhere. And that somehow they're connected to us because each and every one of us, by the way, you can only be lifted by the shadows particular to your earth, to your nature. Someone else's shadow may stir something in you, but it's not the same. She said, so I started to realize that there was probably something that we hadn't understood. And as I began to understand it, we talked about it and we started to work at it. She said, and here's what I found out. When we were walking across the valley, the very movement of our own shadow produced a space and a place in which and through which these shadows could come and get us. And so the shadow creatures would actually sneak up on us through our own shadow. And our shadow, and since it was always moving, we never saw the shadow creature get us because they always came to us through our own shadow. She said, so I came up with a plan. And the teacher smiled. He knew what it was. She said, what we would do is we would only walk at direct midday when the sun was directly overhead so that we weren't casting a shadow. And only lasted a few minutes. That's why it took so long to cross the valley. She said, because if we started walking, the minute we started walking and we had a shadow, the shadow creature could come up and get us in that. Now, in case that's not clear, and it doesn't necessarily mean what you think it is, the movement of thought cannot see the darkness that it moves within and that it is a part of. Translated, when you're captured by your own thoughts and feelings, by the movement of them, you can't see that part and parcel with all of that activity, with the desire to become, is the fear of not. That thought by its very nature has opposites, and the opposite is what we're calling the shadow, so that when you pursue a pleasure, the shadow of pain is there, but you can't see it because you're captured by the movement of the idea of pleasure. And that the mind works like that, but the mind being in the dark, being the activity of thought only, because that's what the sleeping mind is, the activity of thought only, no light in it. The activity of that mind never sees that it, by its very movement, it produces what punishes it. Can't see it. Not practical thought. Self-thought. My day, my time, my plan, my past, my future, my family. Anytime you, the sensation, the identification, my is in there, there's the shadow. And when the couple realized this, they began to be able to walk across the valley. And I need to put this in because I have to get to the rest of the explanation. What I'm talking about now is what happens when a person starts to understand that there is all of this movement all the time, but you can learn to walk in stillness. You can learn to sit in stillness. You can learn to be still wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And why now? Listen, this is really important. Really important. So try to get this. Stillness in the psychology, stillness in us, is a form of light. Stillness is a form of light. Why? Let's come awake. Because it is by stillness that there is contrast to movement. And it is contrast that is a form of light, isn't it? How do you see what you see other than by contrast? So when we talk about light inside of a person, we're talking about the ability that we have when we're still to see by that stillness, through the contrast of its existence to that which is in constant movement, that which moves. But it's more than that, because this light and this stillness have a quality in common. They have a character in common. And the character in common is not so easily understood, because the source of this stillness is light. The source of this stillness is light. So when you're still, and don't make it complicated. Example, ever awakened in the middle of the night to a scary sound in your room? Boy, are you still, aren't you? Do you understand? Man, are you still. And it's a terrible kind of stillness. Because the body itself instinctually has become still. All the senses on high receptivity. But you're hoping that you don't sense anything. You have to come on that high interior stillness. You have to find that absolute alertness, the whole of yourself alert, and then you have to understand that there's something in you that doesn't want to see anything inside of that. And more than that, I'm trying to give your mind ways in which you can begin when the darkness presents itself to you as the light to see that it's not light but darkness. Did you know when you turn on a light in the room that two things happen at once when you turn on a light in the room? The first thing that happens is that what is capable of absorbing the light absorbs it. The second thing is that that which it doesn't absorb, it resists. So wherever you have light come on, you have absorption and resistance. Period. Can you see it physically? Can you understand that idea? That you see the color you see because the matter resists the light. When you become still, and by that contrast, by that light, you become conscious of yourself, of that which is moving in you. That stillness, that light, by its very presence, causes inside of you a state of resistance to occur. It's a natural resistance. You wouldn't see the darkness if it didn't resist the light. You wouldn't feel the disturbance that you're conscious of if it weren't for the light revealing it. But the beauty of what I'm trying to tell you is that that same light enters into the darkness and changes it in spite of its resistance to it. And when that darkness, when that undiscovered territory, that unknown part of yourself, that bit of earth, whatever its nature, that's in the dark, when you become still, you see, because do you understand? Darkness moves along. Thought moves along. But when all we have is that in us and we don't see it, then all we are is it. And we don't serve the light we're given that wants to, and I'm going to say it again, that wants to sacrifice itself. That's what it wants to do. It actually wants to be taken in. It wants to give itself so that that which it gives itself to will no longer be what it is given itself to. And that's an eternal process. It's always going on. So 30-second summary. Just like the two students in the valley, whenever you can, come to be as still as you know how. Even though you're talking to people, even though you're walking, even though you're driving, you come as still as you can. Because when you become as still as you can, everything that's moving will become evident to you. And in the awareness of everything that's moving in you, that which is moving in you will be changed by the awareness of it. You will no longer participate in what has been punishing you. You will participate in the action of the light that wants to perfect the darkness that it was given to and for. You do the work and you'll understand this.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com. where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polanski of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.